get connected with Take Two Radio on Facebook or Twitter at Take Two Radio. For email updates on future shows, follow at Blog Talk Radio. For previous episodes, upcoming guests, and more, visit Take2Radio.com.
Hi, this is Dave Rowntree, co-author of the soon-to-be-released Demon Street USA, author of Paranormal Technology, an all-around science geek in the paranormal. And when I'm not doing anything, I sit around and chuckle to the antics of the Mallard Report.
The opinions expressed on the Mallard Report are those of the hosts and participants and are not intended to and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of any simulcasting radio network or sponsor. All listeners are advised to make their own decisions.
It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report. The Paranormal Talk Radio Show with Jim Mallard as your host. See what lies beneath any paranormal activity. Go inside a world that others don't want to see. It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report.
I want to thank everybody for talking with me tonight. I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight here on the Mallard Report. I'm your host, Jim Mallard. I want to thank SpectrumLight.com for sponsoring the show. Visit SpectrumState.com or follow them on Twitter at AU Paranormal. They provide they work great with Sony cameras. So check them out, SpectrumState.com. Tonight I have two guests, which is kind of rare because we were just talking about this off air. Kind of gets a little dicey at times. People start talking over each other. That's okay. Once in a while, we've got to make the bold jump. So here we go. Tonight I have Lillian Roberts and Sarah K. Miller. No.
Sarah. There, you got it.
Yeah, close enough. I told you I was going to mess it up. I've listened to the video. You're probably wondering where all these spikes are coming from. You were talking about your dog. Which is unfortunate. Are you still doing that, by the way? Selling autographed books for your dog?
Yeah, I am, actually. She isn't cured yet. So, you know, we're going to keep doing that. I've been selling autographed copies of my three paperbacks and putting the profits toward my dog's cancer treatment.
Okay. So how can people get one of those? I guess this should be my questions.
Off my website, sarahkajane.com, there's a tab, Katie Care, that's the name of the page, and they can see a little video about, you know, what I'm doing and what's going on with Katie. She's adorable. I highly recommend go watch the video, and you can just purchase it right off the website.
All right, and what's your website? I guess we should get that full.
Yeah, sarahkajane.com. SarahkaJonae.com. Thanks, Mom and Dad, for that name.
I was going to say, how do they come up with that? Do you have any clue?
Oh, totally. Well, Sarika is a very popular Czech name, and my family on my mother's side is all Czech. And my great-grandfather's name was John. So Sarika was because that's like the Czech equivalent of Sarah, and then Jeanne was a feminized version of John.
Well, we thank them for that tonight, I promise you. So, Lillian, do you have any special, I don't want to use the word pet project, that sounds very inappropriate at this point, but stuff that you're doing like that?
No.
Okay.
No. I do have two dogs, but I'm not doing that. I had two dogs. I only have one now. The other one passed away.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. So, who wants to go first? It's about telling me about what their books actually are about.
Mine?
Yeah, go ahead. Since I was just talking, go ahead.
Okay. Well, my books are about immortals. So, basically, I started to write one book, and by the time I was finished, I had eight. So it became a series, and it's called the Immortal Rapture Series. And I just, it's all about immortality because I've been absolutely fascinated with human immortality ever since I was in college. So I knew that I most likely will never see that happen in my lifetime. So I decided to make it happen in my books. That's how I basically started. So I do have 4 books that have been published so far. There is a 5th one that should be coming towards the end of the month. And then the remaining 3 will be published quarterly.
Well, Mike, you just said you have 8 books.
Yes.
I can't. People tell me I should be trying to write 1. I can't. I'm trying to wrap my head around writing 8, or even having the concept for 8. How does it?
I started to write, like I said, 1, and the basic thought that I had was to combine 2 people from totally different worlds. And 1 human, 1 immortal. It's not a vampire now. It's just a person that lives forever. So I started to write, and I was absolutely stunned to find out how all the other people, all the other characters in my book just fell in place. And I kept writing and writing and writing. And by the time I was finished, I had approximately 380,000 words. So, you know, I didn't want to print a tome. I wanted a book. So I think I was told it was about 80,000 words per book, 70 to 80,000. So it became 8 books.
I try to write a blog, and I'm lucky to get out a paragraph and a half. So obviously you had a passion for it, and you had a good story, and you went to town with it.
Yes.
So
I sure did.
So are these your first books?
Yes. Actually, I started to write The Immortal Awakening when I was in college, and I did not finish it because, you know, getting married and having children and having a very demanding job, I couldn't spend all the time I wanted to the books. But later on, it became a lot easier, so I started to write, and from that one book, now I have a whole series. And I'm actually into the next book. There's going to be a standalone. I'm going to try to make it a standalone 1 book.
That just baffles me. Okay. Sergey. No. Miss Miller.
You know, you can just call me SJ. That's my nickname. Sergey Jean A. SJ. People call me that all the time. I love it. I think it's cute.
Oh, good grief. Thank your parents for me, just for the record. I'm assuming this writing process didn't happen the same way for you, where you sat down and wrote 8 books at one fell swoop.
Oh, yeah, I just banged it out over a weekend. No problem. No. I started with 1 book, and just like Lillian, I started in college, and it took forever to get the first one, and I was, like, certain that I was just going to write this one, and the next thing I know, I've got the second one done, and then the third one done, and I kind of felt that the 3 sort of wrapped it up, but I have so many other ideas and so many other stories that I'm writing, like, 5 books at once right now, so I hope to have 8 books done someday, but I'm still amazed that Lillian's written that many. I mean, it's still, even though I've written 3, it's still, like, 8? Really? 8?
Hey, I'm just impressed somebody has wrote 1. Oh, wait, that's just based off my track record, so.
Well, the first one is always the hardest. It's always the hardest. It does get easier after the first one, for sure.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm taking your word for it. I keep scribbling stuff down on index cards, like, I, you know, want to write about this. I can't even get that far, like, what I want to write about yet, so.
So,
Now, Lillian, I caught this in your bio, and it kind of threw me for a loop. You're an engineer by trade?
Yes.
What kind of engineer?
Electrical engineer. But actually, I don't do what I studied in college. I work for a big corporation, and I'm a fiber optics engineer. So I have... what I really do is design jobs for the company for big corporations or even for individuals, you know, just design jobs, and then construction and installation takes the jobs and they install the fiber, provide service.
So I've got to ask this, because normally, you know, people are always, you know, studied English, and that was their great their passion. So has being an engineer helped you being a writer?
Being an engineer, you mean?
Yeah. We're
no.
studying that now. No, okay.
Actually, that is all math, so it really had nothing to do with writing. The only thing that it did for me was the fact that, you know, I was involved in science. And that's when I started to really, I knew the scientists already were looking into the possibility of immortality, and they still are. It's just a question out there. And that's how I kind of became involved with this immortality issue, and it gave me the idea of writing my book.
So now I'm going to change the pace up on you two. How did you two come together? Because you don't necessarily, I mean, you wouldn't be together otherwise. So how did I get you two together?
We met on Facebook and started just among different authors. And I ended up telling her that I do publicity for authors. So it was a kind of a long story. She ended up hiring me to publicize her first book, Ariel, Immortal Awakening, and then I worked with her through the series. Then I got a book deal because I originally self-published. My publishing company hired me on as a book manager, and then I referred Lillian, and they started publishing the rest of her series. So we've known each other for a couple of years now, and we've gone quite a long ways from being, you know, two self-published authors who, you know, didn't necessarily know exactly what they were doing to, you know, now both being with BookTrope, that's our publisher, they're great, and, you know, winning contests and putting out multiple books and lots of fun stuff. Yes.
So, being a book publisher, what would your advice be for somebody that's starting out into self-publishing or however, either way, if they have a company or self-publishing or however you want to slide?
You know, it's great that we have this self-publishing option now. I mean, as a publicist, I work with self-published authors. And then, of course, as the company, I also work with what we call indie published authors, people who are at a small publishing house, lots of personal attention. You know, it's not like a big, huge publisher, but they're still very different and both great options for someone who's like a first-time author and isn't sure which way to go. I mean, my advice really is, if you're the type of author who wants a lot of control, who has a lot of time to do promotion, and who doesn't mind self-promotion, it's a really good idea sometimes to start with self-publishing and just see kind of where it goes. You have a lot more freedom. But if you get a publisher, you've got all this support. You don't have to pay anything out of pocket. You know, they'll do your cover. They'll do everything for you. You still have to do some of your own promotion, though. That's something that I always tell authors who are saying, oh, I think I'm ready to publish. I say, okay, well, you need to resign yourself to the fact that no matter what, even if you get a publishing deal with, you know, a big, big publisher, they're still going to want you to do some promotion. So it's really just a matter of sitting down and being honest with yourself of, do I have a little bit of time to do promotion and then let a publisher do most of it? Or do I have the time to promote it myself, the money to put into getting a good editor and all that too. You cannot skip that, even if you're self-published. And just really be honest with yourself. What are you looking for? And then, you know, once you figure it out, just, you know, you have to go for it 100%. It is not something that will just kind of fall into your lap, or you can just put something online and it'll just take off. You need to be like full force. Just, I'm going to make this happen.
I totally agree with that whole sentiment that you have to make it happen, because that rule applies to doing my show, because if I waited for people to hear my show and listen to my show instead of going out and knock, well, not proverbially, the whole, you know, going out and knocking on doors or tweeting at people or all this other stuff that you have to do to get them to pay attention to you, it's tough.
And that's something that a lot of people aren't comfortable with. You know, and as a publicist, I tell people, look, if you're really not comfortable pushing your books, that's okay, but you're maybe going to need a publicist then, because somebody needs to go out there knocking on doors and putting stuff on social media and being willing to just, you know, talk about your book and say how great it is. And if you're not willing to do that, you need someone who will.
Exactly. And I think it's really hard to be a self-published author. You have to incur a lot of expenses. And, you know, you have a lot of painful moments when you want to find some sort of a door to success, and somehow it's always shut, just like you said. So it's very, very difficult. My advice to new writers would be that they really need to have a publicist or an agent. It does help a whole lot.
That's what I was just wondering. I was sitting here thinking, you know, obviously you two have that connection. You have worked together. So, of course, this may start to sound a little bit like a, you know, hire her, but that's not what we're doing.
Oh, no.
If you take it that way, of course, because there's somebody out there no matter what disclaimer I put on it, will say that's what I'm talking about. But
right.
And, of course, the other hand is
it's just really a matter of your time, though. I mean, if you really think about it, do you have the time to spend promoting your book? Because it's at least a part-time, it's not a full-time job. And then when are you going to have time to write your next book? Because making a career, and that's my other main piece of advice to somebody, is you can't just write one book. You've got to write several books before you have any chance of really getting a career going. So that's your first priority is well, maybe if you have a family or if you have a day job, of course, those have to come first. Then you have to find time to write your next book. If you have time left over, then maybe self-publishing is a viable option for you. But if you really don't, then trying to get a literary agent, trying to get a publisher is probably, you know, the only way you're going to achieve any success. And that is going to require a lot of time up front, too, sending out a bunch of query letters and you know, talking to smaller publishers. Sometimes you can submit straight to them. It's a big investment that is completely worth it. But just, you know, resign yourself to that so that you don't give up right before your break is about to happen.
Right. So I now want to get a little nut and bolty into this. How I noticed, Lillian, you write in the romance thriller area some. So how do you stay in genre, so to speak, when you're writing? Or does that come later? You write it and then figure out what it is? Or
no, actually, once you start and the thought that you have, you first get your first characters. And you sort of build your plot around those two characters. And for me, it has always been romance and paranormal. So I stay with it. It's not really difficult. So it may be for others, but it's not for me. It is just like Serka was saying, trying to find time, staying late at night and putting your thoughts together and stay within the idea, the thought that you have, and stay with it. Don't go outside that. I'm not sure. Everybody works differently. Not every author thinks the same way. so or writes the same way, or you know, creates their thoughts the same way. But that's how I stay with it.
So I've got a question for you. Since my main website is italkparanormal.com, I've got to ask, where do you draw your inspiration for paranormal type writing from?
Well, I sort of believe in that. I'm a firm believer of paranormal. So I have had a few personal experiences. And it's kind of difficult to speak about that. But it has to do with family members and my sister personally who passed away. So I am a firm believer. I do listen to your show, and
well,
I do hear.
Well, thank you.
Well,
thank you for listening, and I understand, because those stories can be deep and well-rooted within your soul and not something you are open to sharing, but I was just kind of curious, because that always kind of, you know, being the nature of the beast,
yeah.
I'm always curious about that. So,
you know, it is difficult to speak about those thoughts, because many people do not think the same way. So some find it not being real, or the experiences you have are just made up in your mind. So, you know, most people just sort of keep it to themselves.
I know I keep a lot to myself. So I've told a few people that I know, but I don't sit here and write all my stories off every week, so I understand.
True.
So, CJ,
I've had a couple of paranormal experiences as well, and I'll tell you, when I tell people about them, they think I'm crazy. And it's hard, because I think that's the reaction everyone gets, and so then nobody wants to talk about it anymore.
That's exciting.
So, I mean, I was really lucky growing up in California, and then I went to college in New York, and I personally have found people are a lot more open-minded to that kind of stuff, you know, and people are more, you know, forward about that. And so it was easier for me to believe and to talk about it. But then I go other places and they're like, you saw a ghost? That's crazy. Ghosts don't exist. I'm like, really? Because there's so much, you know, so much that says that they do. But all right, you know, if you don't want to believe it, I'm not going to change your mind.
I love this. I love this, because I was at run a paranormal investigation team. I went to a place that is kind of active, but we went to approach the owner about investigating there, and for an hour, I don't believe this place is, but then had another story, and then would call another staff member over to tell us another story, but I don't believe it is here. But everybody, it seemed that for an hour, there was probably five people that this owner called in to tell a story, but I don't believe them, you know, but she called the next person, and it's like, but you know their stories, and you're telling us to listen to their, you know, it's like, okay. You know, I just sat there and listened and enjoyed the conversation. But yeah,
well,
it's
one of the great things about fiction, you know. I mean, in fiction, like, you can talk about it and everybody accepts it, you know. So I think, I mean, that's a great avenue, like, for Lillian writing paranormal romances, especially in her first book. There's a lot of that sort of activity, and everybody will read it and think, wow, that's really cool. And they'll, just for a moment, you know, when they're reading it, they believe maybe it's possible. But then in real life, nobody wants to admit it. No one wants to even entertain the notion.
Well, now I'm going to head down the road of, now that you've got her first book now, and you just signed on to promote it, being paranormal, does that make it more difficult to promote for you, or easier to promote for you?
For me or for Sarka?
For Sarka, because she's the promoting person.
Right.
But
well, yeah, I mean, I guess for both of us, we both promote it. No, not at all. People love paranormal. Paranormal is really hot right now. You know, everybody's into ghosts and vampires and werewolves, and you know, that opens the way for mediums and psychics, and that's everybody is fascinated by it. You know, if you put it out there as a nonfiction, that might be a little bit harder. But telling those kinds of stories, it's very easy to promote. Everybody is really interested, and they love it. There's such an opportunity for being creative. You know, when I tell them, like Lillian brought up, that she has these great immortal characters, and they're not vampires, and they're not fae, you know, they're not fairies, and they're not anything exactly that you might have read something else. that really sparks people's interest. They're like, oh, really? So then what's her story about? And then I can go in and explain the whole, you know, she's created this whole immortal mythology, you know, these whole characters that have been, you know, kind of secretly hiding in plain sight the whole time. And that gets everybody's interest because they're like, maybe there really could be immortals hiding in plain sight. How would I know? It's fun.
I think it's fun, and I think it's fun talking about the real end of it, people that are willing to share their stories. And sometimes you kind of go, even me being a believer, you go, I still don't believe that one.
Yeah.
So.
They might not believe, but they might still find it entertaining. Yeah. So that's where you got that.
Yeah. It's not just the, you know, immortality, it's also the romance. So it's something that mostly women, you know. I think it's the buyers are mostly women on well, that side. But there are a few men that they love romance, so.
Well, I've got to learn somewhere. I mean, no.
You know, it's funny you say that because I've had several guys read my book, especially the first one, Between Boyfriends, and say, now I know how women think. I would never have read this book, but I am so glad I did because now I understand. And so smart men, very savvy smart men, will read women's fiction and romances because it gives a lot of ideas, not just how women think, but what women want. So,
exactly. I had a British teacher who wrote me, he was reading the book on the train while going to work and back. And he was telling me that he learned now how to write romance from my books, which I found kind of cute for a teacher telling me that. So it's pretty nice.
See, now you just need to figure out how to market that idea to guys so they would buy your books more.
I hope so. But I'm pretty happy with, you know, the way they sell.
Well, but as like I was saying, with being the show host, I can always use another 100 downloads, though.
So. Oh, of course. I mean, within the next hour, that would be great. Go ahead. You know, I actually have... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's... I was just saying yes.
So go ahead.
Go ahead. That idea of kind of marketing to men a little bit. Now, I mean, we don't put a lot of time into that, but there actually, that is something that we've done a bit. I've, more so for my books than for Lillian's, but we've done that too, a little bit of this sort of like, you want to know how, you know, women think, you want to know like maybe why you're not communicating well with women, and, you know, here, read this book and find out. I actually had a couple of college students do some Vine videos for my first book saying, oh, you know, I read this book and now I got a girlfriend. Now I know, like, how to treat women. So, you know, you spread those around and then people sometimes go, well, you know, okay, you know, maybe I'll check that out. So that's how you can actually use that strategy to promote the books because, I mean, what guy feels like they know everything about women?
Not this one. I can only speak for me, but... Actually,
yeah, everyone can always use a little help.
you know, it's really funny because I have my wife on the show next week. Because actually next week is our anniversary, so I said, what better anniversary present than book her on my show?
Oh, great.
Happy anniversary early.
Thank you. Yes. So she's probably going to listen to this and go, yeah, he doesn't know anything about women, and next week I'll probably get laid out for even going anywhere near this topic. But So, well, you mentioned Vine. I've dabbled with it. I'm horrible at it, but is that how did it work for you? How did Vine work for you, I guess? I'm just going to ask the question straight.
Well, I mean, Vine videos they're perfect. I mean, they're super short, they're funny, they're easy to, you know, share on Twitter, and so they work really well because, you know, people have a short attention span. You give them a short little funny clip, and they're going to want to know more. What I've had really good luck with Vine is having a lot of different people with a lot of different perspectives doing almost like a little skit. And we've actually gotten pretty creative having, there's one where there's a girl and her boyfriend's like, I'm done with you, and, like, walks out, and she's like, oh, we're crying. And then her friend comes and goes, oh, Between Boyfriends, help me, and, like, tosses her the book. And everyone loves it. It's just this really cute little clip that everyone can relate to because, I mean, who hasn't been dumped? I mean, everyone at least once. So that's kind of, you know, it's sort of a little skit, and it works really well because people love going, oh, yeah, I totally relate to that. Like, that's happened to me before, too.
It makes also, sense to me. I just don't have the ideas for it. Go ahead. What?
Also, I think creating short trailers on your books, they have helped me also because I can look on the trailer and look and see what the book is about in just a short time. So, and you can create those. I can create those by myself. So every time I publish a book, I do one of those and put it on my Facebook and, you know, send it to my friends and things like that. So it does help.
Yeah, I think, you know, they always say don't judge a book by its cover, but I think a lot of that does happen.
Judge a book by its book trailer, not its cover. At least give it 30 seconds to convince you why you should read it.
You would be surprised, though, how many people, including myself, will pick up a book because of the cover.
Well,
you would be surprised.
I'm not surprised by anything. I mean, I host a paranormal show. I'm not surprised by anything. But I think more often than not, people have to be excited or have a desire to go get the book, though, not just pick it up because of its cover.
Yes. Yes.
Well, what I've found, I mean, just, you know, a little from my publicity thing, the number one reason people buy a book, unless, of course, they've already read something by the author, the number one reason is from personal recommendation. You're never going to get something that's going to push someone to go and actually buy a book more than their friend telling them they love the book. So that's, you know, that's like the best way is to get people talking about your book. After that, the reason most people buy books is from customer reviews. They don't care so much about, you know, what the New York Times has said or what USA Today said. Not that that's not great, and not that I don't love editorial reviews. I mean, I do. But customer reviews, the ones just from your average person, are what people go off next besides personal recommendations. Anything that starts to give someone a sense of what a real person thinks about the book is gonna get them to buy it more than the book's description, more than the cover. The cover might catch their eye. But it's the reviews that people really say are what got them from thinking, maybe, to, yeah, I got to have this book.
Makes sense to me. I mean, you got to have the quality information out there. Word of mouth is the best way to do anything. I mean, because I can sit here and tell you I host the best show ever, but until somebody else tells you that, it's hard to believe.
It is a little surprising, though. People think that people would give more weight to a professional review than a personal recommendation or a customer review, or that direct advertising might account for more sales. And of course, that helps too, but it's really that personal connection that somebody makes, even if, you know, it's close, even if it's just an online review, it still feels like your friend is telling you just, oh yeah, I liked it and this is why. But it is surprising to some people because, you know, they're like, oh, well, you know, what do they know? It's like, well, they're the reader. They're the ones who really know if it's a good book or not.
Yes, you do have to have a whole lot of reviews. Some of them may not be that great. Some of them may be great. You have to learn to know that your book may not be everyone's cup of tea. So once in you go with that, you have no issues.
This is about the point in the show where I always implore people, especially now we're in this topic, to, if you buy one of their books or you listen to the podcast or whatever you do, just take a minute, especially when it's a smaller person or a smaller author or whatever, give them the time to write a review, even if you hated the book or loved the book or about the book. Just let them get the feedback so they know for the next time, because it sounds like both these ladies are writing I almost said again, but it sounds like you've been going through that, and that's going to lead me to my next point. But, yeah, it's an ongoing process, and if you don't tell somebody, they don't know and don't grow. So, anyways,
exactly.
kicks the soapbox right. away. Go ahead.
And it's up to us too, as the author, to say, of course, all feedback is valuable, but you have to think too, like, did the person not like the book because it's just not their kind of book, or like Lily's been, it's not their cup of tea, or do they have some really good feedback that you need to change? When I first wrote Between Boyfriends, I finished it in 2005, sent it out to a bunch of agents, and got back a bunch of feedback. And it was good and it was bad. And, of course, it was the negative feedback that helped me the most. I did a major rewrite over the next, like, 2 years and came up with a much, much, much better book thanks to them taking the time to tell me what could be improved. So I definitely... still, I mean, I'm never going to be perfect. I definitely want feedback. But sometimes you have to be discerning. If somebody, you know, says, oh, this is totally unbelievable, and you're like, really? Because I based it on true events. So that's the kind of feedback you might want to just say, okay, that's not the most helpful.
So my next question is for both of you. It's kind of this awkward question I like posing because I haven't found out the best way to answer it or ask it yet, but it's about writer's block. What do you do when you hit that wall and you just can't write anymore? You're halfway, partially way through a story, and it just stops. How do you...
For me, personally, yeah. When I get to that point, I just walk away. I walk away, and I stay away from the book. I think we all have talked about this. Authors talk about this all the time because we have joined all of social media, and we connect daily, and we just walk away from the book, stay 3-4 weeks away, and you'd be surprised when you come back. You're ready to write. That's for me.
Yeah, and I've never really had writer's block. Not really. I've gotten to a point where I was just too tired to keep writing. Because sometimes I just get in the flow, and I'm just up really, really, really late writing, and then my brain doesn't work anymore. And that's not the same thing, but I've never really had writer's block. But what I've told people, because, of course, my authors, that happens to them all the time, it's normal. I mean, I'm weird because I haven't had it. But what I tell them to do is to just go back and read what they've written. Just enjoy it. Just don't even think about writing. Just read. Even go back a book if you're in a series and just start reading again. And usually that gets you back in that mode that you were in when you wrote it, and suddenly you've got all these new ideas and you just can't wait to start writing again. And that's helped a lot of people. It's not going to help everybody, but that's a strategy. And what Lillian said too, taking off the pressure, walking away, focusing on something else, and then come back to it. That's also a great strategy.
I usually get to that point when I am somewhere where I have like 3 or 4 different thoughts of which way I want to go, and I cannot make up my mind which one would be best. That is when I absolutely cannot think anymore.
Right. I know how that goes.
And that's a good time, too, to ask other people. Sometimes getting feedback from other authors is to which way to go. It can be so helpful, especially people, you know, that you've developed a relationship with and you really trust their judgment, that they really get your style and they really know what your stories are. I was actually just doing that this morning with one of my authors. She was writing a sequel to her bestseller, The Storms That Fated Us, and she was asking me, you know, what am I going to do? Like, I've got these characters, and I'm not sure which way I want to go. And out of the blue, like, I came up with something, and she's like, oh, my God, I love that. And then from there, we developed it. And that can be so helpful, finding a beta reader or another author or, you know, someone at your publisher if you have an editor to just kind of say, oh, I'm not sure where I want to take this, or maybe I have too many options, you know. And your readers are always a great source of feedback. I mean, they're your fans. They're the ones who sometimes know your characters better than you do. And they can be a great resource when you're just not quite sure what comes next.
That just sounds scary to me. The fans knowing your book better than you do. I just can't. I've heard that line before, but it's one of those lines that I guess until I put the pen to paper and have something out there, I guess I'm probably going to write a story about what I know more than a fiction story, but still.
I think it, what it is, I think, is as an author, you, no matter how much, how real your characters become, they do, they totally become real people. You still are in this process where you're still typing them into creation. For your readers, there is no separation. They're just like, the readers are real people. And so I think that's why sometimes they know them better than you do, because they don't have that distance that you have to have as an author and an observer. You have to kind of observe yourself writing, and so you know that they're not completely real, but your readers don't have that distance.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, you know, the next fun question I like to ask some authors is, would you like your books turned into movies, or a movie, or however that would flow?
Yes. Of course. I certainly would.
Yeah, and the other fun part of that, who would you want starring in them?
Oh, easy.
And?
Yeah, that is pretty easy.
Don't see, because it's both of our choice. Ian Somerlander, I think, would be my choice for my main character, and then Christy Kirk for the girl. I think that would be perfect for my book.
And it's funny, because I think, because Lillian's series is so long, I think it would be a great TV show. It could totally be the next Vampire Diaries, and which is really funny, because, of course, that's what Ian Somerhalder's in. And she's right. They would be perfect for her books. I love Ashley Benson, Hannah from Pretty Little Liars. She would be a perfect Jan. And, you know, because mine's a little shorter, I think a movie would be better, and I would love to see her in that. I mean, I would love to have Ian Somerhalder in it too, but my main character is Hispanic, and Ian's a great actor. I just don't know that he could quite pull off Hispanic.
Yeah, you never know.
I agree.
We could always make things work, I'm sure. Yeah, for the right price, anything could happen. So I noticed that you're both on Upgrade Your Story, but it, let's see. Lillian, you're on in September, and CJ, you're on this week. Is that right?
Yeah, Thursday I'll be on Upgrade Your Story with Allie Bishop.
And I'm assuming she normally talks to authors then? Is that what her racket is?
Yeah, she has three different shows, but Upgrade Your Story is definitely with authors.
Yeah, this is the one I'm on September. September the 9th.
I have the 4th wrote down, but that could be wrong. It could be a bad 4, too.
I can't remember.
It could be a bad 4 in my notebook. Who knows? Those numbers tend to...
I'm a terrible publicist. I don't remember.
Well, it's in September. There's plenty of... Nobody will be listening to the show and be like, oh, I remember. Let me go find that show. Unless they're listening in September. So, as you're going through these series... Do you have other ideas for books that you... What do you do with them once you get... If you have an idea that's totally not in line with what you're writing?
Are you asking me, Jim?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I do have an idea. And actually, like I said, I did start another book. I'm a third into that book. It's not... And this is where I steer away from what I did for the 8 books. This book I'm writing is historic romance, and it's British Regency. So I have been doing a lot of research and spending a lot of time. That's why I have been only a third into that, and very frustrating. But I'm going to do it.
I understand that. I understand frustration. I get it a lot. So, CJ, what do you do when you... Yes.
I have so many ideas, and I have about...
You seem like that type of person. I just had to overstep you there for a second.
I have, like, 3 different books that I've started, and, you know, it was really easy when I had a series, because when I would get other ideas, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to jot down the idea, and I'm just going to put it aside, because I'm finishing the series, you know? But now, it's like, oh, okay, I have so much that I want to write. I have a young adult fantasy novel that I'm working on. I have more sort of in the romantic comedy chick lit genre that I've already written. Then I actually have a script that I'm working on. Who knows if I'll ever finish that? And that's also kind of a romantic comedy too that I've been sort of working on for several years now. So I don't really have a great answer for if you have a lot of ideas, what do you do? Except just jot them down. You know, never tell yourself, no, I don't have time for that right now, because you never know when you will have time. So jot them down, you know, remember what you're going to do, maybe write a couple scenes if you feel really, you know, compelled to, and then, you know, once you pick a project, though, just stick with that. That's worked for me.
Me too.
So I've got to wonder, since you have all these ideas in your mind, how much coffee do you drink a day?
Well, I live at Starbucks. I have an IV with water, you know, caffeine sprayed in. No, but I drink a lot of coffee. Sometimes I do switch to decaf, though. I have, you know, the lovely Starbucks gold card, so you can just get free refills on your iced coffee. It helps. I highly recommend it.
I would say, I guess so, if you're going to drink that much, yeah. I just had to ask, because it just seemed, I was waiting for you to say, no, I don't drink coffee, what are you talking about? That was what I was hoping for.
Really, no. There was something really funny I read recently where it was like, you know, everyone knows the story of Rumpelstiltskin, he turned straw into gold, and so someone had this quote I saw on Facebook where, you know, a writer is this magical creature that can turn caffeine into books. It's true. We're fueled by coffee and such.
I like it. It's a good analogy. I like it. So
yeah, I wish I thought of it.
So that's the other thing that I wanted to bring out. How important is it for an author to blog? Blog, I guess, because that's putting their message out. I mean, you've got social media and all that other stuff, but
I harass my authors about blogging, and then I don't do it myself. Like, it's totally a do-what-I-say-not-as-I-do situation. Blogging is incredibly important for an author, unless you already have a huge established fan base. That is how especially self-published authors start to build an audience. And I tell people, you know, at least blog once a week. And if you do it only once a week, try to do it on the same day so that your followers know when to expect new content, but more is always better. Blogging, it's quick, it's fun, it's contemporary, people really relate to that, and it's very easy to share it on social media, and people can ask you questions, it's really interactive, leave comments on your blog and contact you. It's one of the best ways to grow your fan base, because people are willing to take a chance reading a free blog more so necessarily than they're going to go and just buy a book from someone they've never heard of. And then they start to know your writing, and then they start to know you personally, and then they really want to read your books.
Did you just say blogging was fun? I need to go to Starbucks. I think they must be putting something in your coffee.
Yeah. Of course. Why do you think so many people come back? They totally put something in the coffee. It makes everything fun. Maybe you're just blogging about the wrong things. I don't know.
I have no time to do that. Honestly, I am drowning with all the things that I have to do, trying to find time to write, staying up until 1 in the morning, a full-time job, and a social media. I'm involved in so many things. I just absolutely have no time to blog.
I just heard it was very important, so you might want to get on that.
Oh, it is very important, but some people don't have time. I do. I harass them. When I say harass, I'm not kidding. I harass my authors to do it.
She tells me daily.
See? This whole thing just backfired on you. Now it's turned
into... One trick you can do, though, is guest posts. If you don't have time to blog, if you have some people who do guest posts, or guest reviews, at least then you can get some content on there. And as long as you're finding people who, you know, write about your topic and maybe have a similar viewpoint, that's a really good way to get content on there when you don't have time to write every week.
And I want to throw this out to you, since you're kind of a publicist and you have other authors are going to pick the show up and listen to it tonight. I tweet out a link every so often. I'll send it to you in an email as well. But I put a book of the week in my newsletter, and I've been trying to get people to send me their book instead of me just going on Amazon and picking one at random from whoever.
So just send it over,
and I'll file it in my email, and then I'll tell you when I post it as part of the newsletter as well.
Yeah, so. Ariel Immortal Awakening will be your next one. Between Boyfriends will be the one after that. And I've got about 8 more I can recommend for you. No problem. I'll send you whatever you need. But and then after that, after you get all of my authors, then all you got to do is put something on social media or put something on your website saying, you know, send me your book of the month, and you will get like 1,000 responses, and then you're going to ask
see,
to
I haven't.
It because
I haven't. I've been tweeting it for a week now, and I've got 2. And I've got a bunch of people that have retweeted it. You know, authors that have books, they've retweeted it and didn't take the time to send me the message.
Put it in a Facebook group for authors, and they will jump on that.
Well,
it's probably just not getting seen by the right people.
If you haven't noticed, I'm not exactly an author, and I'm not exactly even close.
Okay, let me put it that way. If you put all of my clients' books in there, I will post something for you in some groups afterwards, and I promise I will get you some more people.
I'll help you if you help me. That's what I'll say.
Perfect.
Obviously, you should know that by now.
Well, you didn't know you were going to get a deal tonight, did you?
Oh, I am always looking for opportunities. So,
my 160 news, 160, I think it is. I didn't check today, but newsletter subscribers are looking forward to it, plus the people that should be signing up, because next week I'm giving away some swag to somebody that's on the newsletter list. Hint, hint, for anybody that isn't on there. Anyways.
There you go.
So, Lillian, tell me what... go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just, you know, I saw an opportunity for a plug. J.P. Summers, The Storm That Faded Us, is free on Amazon right now. If people are listening, thinking, I don't want to wait till next week, I want free stuff now. Go get that. It's amazing.
There you go. See, I'm giving free stuff away tonight to everybody. Anybody that listens can go get that. See? It's all good. So, okay. Oh, boy. Lillian, hit me with where people can find your book and where people can find you.
Well, they can find me on my website, which is www.lillianroberts.com. And I'm on Amazon. Amazon US, UK, Barnes & Noble. If they put in my name, my books will come up.
I want to thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you for having us.
So, SJ, where can people find you? I mean, besides if they could ever spell your name right or pronounce it right, but that's here or there.
That's fine. SarahKajane.com, FJPublicity.com, that's my publicity site. I have a blog, betweenboyfriends.com. There's a hyphen, though, between-boyfriends.com. That's my blog. I'm on Facebook. So is Lillian. We're both on Twitter. I'm at Sarah Kajane and then at SJPublicity9. She's at Lillian3Roberts. So there are a lot of ways. And both of our books are on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. So people forget iTunes has an e-book store.
And they can find her on Starbucks.
Yes, and I'm always in Starbucks. If you want to come see me in person, wander around San Diego, hit all the Starbucks, you will find me.
If you need that book signed, there you go. Go to Starbucks. Well, I want to thank you for joining
$25
me. All right, ladies. Thank you. This is that point of the show I was talking to you about earlier. So have a good night.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night. You too.
So I want to thank them both for jumping on, and it was different having 2 guests and a different dynamic, and it leads to some different conversations, which is good. So I want to thank them both again, and I'll get all that information as part of the podcast. If you need a link, I can do that for you. Okay. Don't forget to visit SpectreState.com and check out their IR boosters and follow them on Twitter at AU Paranormal. My final thought tonight is going to be a little different than normal. Well, not really. I'm just kidding. My final thought tonight is I was posed a question this afternoon on Facebook. It wasn't really posed to me. It was kind of a statement, but I'm going to pose it to you as a question. My group investigates twice a month. How are they reviewing all the data they say they're collecting? If they're collecting 12 cameras at 12 hours with what, who knows how many recorders. We'll just say 12 for, you know, keep the numerology going. That's 144 hours of video, 144 hours of audio. Okay, so that's 288 hours of video or audio to go over. So that's, what, 12 days worth of stuff, of hours of audio and video to go over, and they're doing it in 2 weeks, which is just the shade under that. Boy, I'm just did the math here, and that gives you 2 days off, which is cool. So you can get ready and go back out and investigate again, eh? What's the rush? I know there's so many people out there that are so excited to get that belt loop that says, hey, we've been to X, Y, Z, and D. But if you're not doing a quality job investigating, what's the point? If you have 700 investigations, but you never have done a complete, thorough job reviewing, what's the point of doing that many investigations over and over again? I don't know. That's what I'm asking you. Maybe somebody out there can explain to me what's the point of having a large quantity of investigations over a quality investigation. I know nobody will be able to convince me that doing 700 investigations in a year, or now that's a bit exaggerated, or 100 investigations a year is a good idea. But you can try at italkparanormal at Gmail, or italkparanormal on Twitter, or facebook.com/italkparanormal. That's what you can do. You can, well, convince me. It shouldn't be that difficult. You're the one doing it. You have the methodology of doing it down, right? So you can share that with me. I mean, if you have 40 members, this 12-hour, 12-day thing kind of goes away, right? So it gets spread out, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it is a good idea. What do I know? I'm just thinking that running out and investigating and not doing, I mean, okay, here's the other thing. Who's doing the lead into that stuff? The research about the property and the homeowners and all that fun stuff? Or are you just playing to play to get that number so high? So there's a lot of questions pre and post. I mean, I'm sure the investigation's fine because that takes you 12 hours, whatever the number is that you've spent investigating. So I'm sure that goes fine. Hey, gang, I'm out of time. Talk to you next week.
Well, before we flip that on-air sign to the off position, a quick reminder. For all things about the report, previews, and reviews, go to italkparanormal.com. That's italkparanormal.com. Good night.
If you're looking for a radio show where all things paranormal go, well, tune in and be in the know with Jim Mallard as your host.
Get connected with Take Two Radio on Facebook or Twitter at Take Two Radio. For email updates on future shows, follow at Blog Talk Radio. For previous episodes, upcoming guests, and more, visit TakeTwoRadio.com.